Now could I invite Kelly and Samantha Bilbrun, who's been very kind to make a submission, and both come along to speak.
Thank you. And I'm just going to move the microphone, if that's okay. We're sharing the burden.
Joined the field.
So, thank you for inviting us to speak today. I'm Kelly, and this is Sam, and if you get that wrong, that's fine, because most people do. We're both going to talk a bit today about our story, but I'm going to start off taking a little trip down memory lane, if that's okay. And unlike you and Brian, I do in fact need to read my submission. When I was a little girl, about 12, I set myself two goals. I would be married at 25, and I would have two children by the age of 30. My family instilled in me a belief that I could accomplish anything, that nothing was beyond my reach. In essence, I was encouraged to dream. Sam and I met when I was 24 and she was 25 and probably about 20 kilos lighter. That was 13 years ago, and we still stand strongly side by side today, despite the additional stresses placed on our relationship by government and society. We're proud of this achievement. However, about 1 year into our relationship, we realised we couldn't, in fact, accomplish everything we dreamed of, and that in this country, there was much that was beyond our reach as a same-sex couple. For instance, I could not fulfil my first dream of getting married to Sam at the age of 25. 13 years later, we still can't join this bedrock of society. Having a family, however, became possible 5 years ago, when in Western Australia, reproductive technologies became legally available to lesbians and single women. We registered almost immediately, and after 2 years of counselling and self-reflection, both individually and as a couple, we started down a clear path toward parenthood, all so in thought. That was 3 years ago. We started off accessing intrauterine insemination, or IUI, which is quite different to IVF. Many women do in fact become pregnant this way. It's relatively inexpensive at around $200 per month, nearly $5,000 a year, although none of it is claimable through Medicare for opposite or same-sex couples. After 14 months of this, drugs were added to my protocol, bringing the monthly expense to around $400. Again, no Medicare rebate. Another 6 months of this with no success, and I was advised to try IVF. Thankfully, in WA, we could. I have now completed 4 IVF cycles and another couple IUIs. I've had 6 miscarriages. Fresh IVF cycles vary in cost between $2,500 and $5,500, not including doctor's fees. Under the Medicare safety net, if you're a de facto couple, once you spend $1,000 out of pocket, you receive a rebate of 80% on the remainder of the claimable amount. The only problem for us is that we don't meet the definition of de facto couple. According to the legislation, I am not Sam's spouse and she is not mine. As a result, we individually have to meet out-of-pocket expenses of $1,000 each before any rebate can be sought. That's twice as much as opposite-sex couples in Australia. Infertility is hard enough without having financial barriers placed in your way as well. 3 years after starting treatment, we estimate we've spent at least $30,000. We have refinanced the home once and will likely have to do so again, as Sam now begins her own treatment. Lucky girl. Again, she has to reach $1,000 out-of-pocket expenses before she can claim the rebate. As a couple, we have reached $1,000 several times over, but our input as a couple is invisible, and now we start all over again. Often we sit in the waiting room of our fertility clinic and look around us at the many other couples struggling with infertility. What isn't lost on us, however, is that we pay more for our treatment than they do, and that their struggle is legitimised by the government with financial support that we don't receive. In addition to this, we are unable to relieve some of the financial hardship by taking advantage of federal legislation in other areas, such as taxation and superannuation. Where opposite-sex couples can ease some of their burden by taking advantage of taxation offsets and contribution splitting, we are again treated as two single people. We pay twice into a system that provides no recognition of our long-term commitment to one another and we can't for the life of us understand why this is so, how this is fair. We continually ask why we just don't adopt. The truth is, we would do so in a heartbeat. Except that countries that have an agreement with Australia will not adopt to gays or lesbians. We have heard rumblings that this may change in the future. However, the Liberal government has flagged its intention to place a ban on inter-country adoption for same-sex couples by the end of this year. And in fact, I've just received an email this morning saying it's on the notice paper for the spring sitting. They will do this, even though we can't currently adopt anyway. They not only allow discrimination to occur by doing nothing to remove it, but seek out new ways of inflicting unequal treatment under the law. We have registered our interest in local adoption, so we'll be the second couple, hopefully. But with just 7 children being available for adoption last year in WA, and over 100 heterosexual couples already on the wait list, it is unlikely we will be selected by relinquishing parents. That's a bit about our journey to bring a child into this world, but what about when our child is finally here? And Sam?
Well, in WA, as we've heard this morning from both Piers and Brian, we are very lucky to have some of the most progressive legislation in this country. The birth certificates in the state have now been changed to rightly reflect non-traditional family structures. Instead of mother and father, they now have parent. We have access to the family courts should relationships disintegrate. And parental issues are unlikely to occur in respect to schooling and medical decisions, especially in emergencies. In short, here in WA, we're recognised as a family. Federally, as you're well aware, this isn't the case. This government, in refusing to recognise equal rights for GLBTI people, relegates us to second-class citizens and puts not only our lives at risk both physically and emotionally, but those of our children. This causes both of us more concern than we've ever held for ourselves. Same-sex families have always existed, and in the age-old Aussie way, have done it hard without any complaint. Federally, our children have only one legal parent, but it really is time for this to stop. Discrimination against Kelly, people like Kelly and myself, is systemic in this country, and yet the Prime Minister himself continues to deny this to be the case. Earlier this year in Dublin, when a university student asked him why gays and lesbians were still discriminated against in Australia, the Prime Minister not only denied this was the case, but blatantly lied by telling the student and assembled media, quote, most of the discrimination has been removed. It hasn't, obviously. He can continue to deny there's a problem and label us minority fundamentalists, or he could choose to look at us beyond his personal beliefs and see us for who we really are. A couple, just like any other, trying to realise our childhood dreams under circumstances that can only be described as dream destroying and, over time, soul destroying. It's interesting Brian quoted Martin Luther King Jr. because I also have a quote, not from him, but from his wife, Coretta Scott King. Sadly, both now deceased. She was speaking about rights for GLBTI people in America and said, for too long, our nation has tolerated the insidious form of discrimination against this group of Americans who have worked as hard as any other group, paid our taxes like everyone else, and yet have been denied equal protection under the law. I believe that freedom and justice cannot be parcelled out in pieces to suit political convenience. This is the same that could be said for GLBTI Australians. It is political convenience. Once and for all, we need to bring it to an end. Kelly and I both like to thank you for inviting us here, and we really sincerely hope this inquiry will enable some real change in this country, and that families like Kelly's, a wonderful, wonderful family, who tell their children to reach for the stars and that nothing is unachievable, will be able to do so with confidence, knowing that their straight and gay children alike will have the same opportunities and be treated equally before the law.
Kelly and Samantha, thank you very much for that rather personal story. As I said at the outset, stories like that, which are so important to us and so important in trying to make other people understand the impact of laws,
yes,
which otherwise are just taken for granted and no one thinks about.
Exactly.
You mentioned your experiences in a fertility clinic where you rather thought that other people were getting financial support that you didn't receive. Are there issues of financial support beyond the Medicare safety net and the pharmaceutical benefit safety net that you had in mind?
Yeah, we did mention, not particularly into the fertility clinic, but we did mention a couple of areas, and that is taxation offsets.
Yes.
And superannuation contributions for them.
Yes.
All of which, you know, when used in combination, can assist couples to ease some of the financial burden when paying for infertility treatments. So, you know, piecemeal, one at a time, you look at them one at a time and you think, it's not much. But you actually put them together and it can make quite a large difference over the course of a year's treatment, for instance.
I don't want to ask a question that you don't want to answer publicly, but... I got the impression from something I overheard when you came in that you might both work for an employer that's likely to be reasonably liberal in the employment conditions.
Yes.
Have you sort of thought through the implications of parenting leave and carers leave and so on that would become important to you if you had a child?
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate here, and equally fortunate with the organisation that we work for is the university sector. And we are treated as any other couple, any other heterosexual couple, and we do have access to parental leave. And we have 6 months paid. The birth mother will have 6 months paid, and then the non-birth mother actually gets 14 weeks paid as well. So between us, we can get just about a year off.
So that's an employment condition open to everybody in the university?
Yeah.
And carers leave?
Yes, absolutely.
For both?
Yeah. We're very fortunate. We realise that not everybody is.
You've talked about how it feels as potential parents, how it feels to be treated or to be disadvantaged in the way that you are in terms of federal law. Can you tell me on the other side of the coin how it feels to be recognised as potential parents under WA law?
It's wonderful.
It's actually almost can't explain it. when we first started going to the clinic, this is a bit of an example, when we first started going to the clinic, all their forms said signature of woman, their consent forms, signature of woman and signature of husband. And through working with them, we were one of the first same-sex couples, I think, to actually go to them. And through the years, we've been able to get them to change all their forms, and so now it says signature of woman and signature of partner. And they've come a long way, and they treat us brilliantly.
It was actually not a battle.
It wasn't
a battle. They just, once again, it was, we pointed it out to them and they willingly, it was not a battle at all. Yeah. Within a month, everything was changed.
But saying that, our memories are quite long and it's not something that we take for granted, the fact that we are recognised here. But just the burden that it takes off your shoulders.
One of the... what it's done for us, previous to the legislation coming through, we discussed, we've been together 13 years and obviously discussed becoming parents often, and one of the big hurdles for us to overcome was the fact that that we weren't accepted as an equal part of society, and that obviously has follow-through effect for our potential children or children. And that scared us. It did scare us, particularly when you hear of horror stories of existing families, same-sex families. So once the legislation came through, it actually took a great weight off our mind. Things like I mentioned, medical and schooling decisions, particularly in emergencies. Previous to legislation, you would have had a battle getting schools to recognise a same-sex couple as equal. In hospitals, in medical decisions, there was the potential if one partner was perhaps fatally, a worst-case scenario, that their family could prevent their partner from being with them as they died or got better. They're significant life-altering situations, and what the legislation has done is alleviated some of that, which would not be constantly on your mind, but certainly is in the back of your mind constantly. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, we've heard stories in Sydney about the difficulties of consent carrying through beyond death into the funeral arrangements in quite a significant way too.
I'm sure you've heard some horror stories. Yeah, definitely.
It's just taking that daily worry away that other couples don't have to even give a second thought to. So that if you are in a situation that's, as Sam said, life altering, it's not an additional thing you need to worry about. And I've also mentioned that, yes, we were one of the first couples to access the clinic, but the wonderful thing about being able to access a clinic is that you have a safe environment, you have the option of using a known donor, which we have, but he then signs consent forms and waiver forms so that we know, all three of us, for certain, what our family structure is and what rights and responsibilities each of us have to any child. It takes away that uncertainty. And when we first started, we were the only lesbian couple in the waiting room. Now, every Saturday, not every Saturday, but quite often when we're in there, there's three or four. So, yeah, there are quite a few people accessing the services.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Mark,
thank you.
For coming on. Very helpful indeed.